Alan Kohler here, and I'm talking to Warren Ebert, who is the founder and the CEO of Sentinel Property Group. I last spoke to Warren 5 years ago, which was a long time, and I should have spoken to him before now, because Warren is an interesting character, particularly in terms of commentary on the property market, but also that's the commercial property market, not residential. But also, he's got a pretty good formula for providing a decent yield to income investors. So he says he's averaging 8% paid monthly. They own, his trusts own various types of commercial property, retail, industrial and office, quite a few medical clinics and so on now, and much less retail than he used to. It used to be 60% retail, now it's 30% retail. So he's moving into industrial. But look, it's interesting, and it's a good alternative for people to get some income from. So here's Warren Ebert, CEO of Sentinel Property Group. Well, Warren, let's just start with a reminder, since it's been so long since we've spoken last, a reminder of what your business does.
Alan, Sentinel is a property funds management company who started, bought our first property 15th of January 2010. Since then, we've purchased over $2 billion worth of property. We don't buy residential, but we've got everything from chook farms to ferry terminals at Airlie Beach, shopping centres, offices. We try to, like the other great Warren Buffett, you've got to be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So we buy either sectors that people don't like or in areas that don't like. And we've sold $829 million worth of property in the last 4 years. And we've averaged an internal rate of return of just over 20%, and that's actual cash return to investors. So,
what sort of yield do you average?
At the moment, we're averaging distribution of 8% paid monthly.
Paid monthly, right? Okay. And what sort of gearing do you typically use?
At the moment, we're at 54.56 LVR, and with an interest cover ratio of 4.76.
Why do you use LVR, loan to value ratio? Is that the best way to measure gearing?
Well, that's the way the banks do it. So that's how they loan you money on what the property's worth.
Right.
So if you want money off them, you've got to do it their way.
And do you have a separate unit trust for each property?
Not now, Alan. We started that in the early days because the average age of our investors are 64. So I think most of them have probably got, they have enough money, even though everyone would like a bit more. But they invest with us for income, and a lot of those lost money in the GFC, so they were very concerned where they were investing. So early days, we did all closed-end single-asset funds. But as we went along, you know, all properties can have a problem at some time during their life. So we found it much better to have open-ended funds where you'll have a group of properties, but they're very, very sector specific. So we'll have an industrial fund, we've got a regional office fund, we've got a homemaker fund and a shopping centre fund. So we have only a handful of properties that are in single asset closed end funds now. The open ended is a lot easier to manage. Up here in Queensland, if you want to transfer some of your units to your family or to your superannuation fund or something like that, you have to pay stamp duty up here in Queensland. Where that's if it's in a closed-end fund, where if it is in an open-ended, widely held fund, you don't have to pay stamp duty. So there's advantages there. We just had one of our Victorian investors last week who wants to transfer the units from joint names with his wife into his own. So with that, there's no stamp duty. So once investors feel comfortable that you're not going to put them into something that they don't like, our investors are very happy with that now.
And tell us about your fees. Are you still charging a percentage of income rather than net asset value?
We're just in the process of changing that at the moment, Alan, because the way yields have gone, when we started, we were buying properties at around that 10% average yield. So if you were getting 7% of the net income, you were getting, $7,000 for every $100,000. Now they're at 5% yields on $100,000 property. you'd only get $3,500 management fee, and you've still got as much work. So it's we've been forced to change.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear that, Warren. That was a real point of difference that you had.
We still have a point of difference because we are the cheapest in Australia. Alan, I can send you the list of the other 30 funds. So,
why don't you just tell us what your fee is going to be then?
Our management fee is, I think, works out at 8% of net income, but as a yield chart, I think we're about 0.65 of net asset value.
You think? Come on.
Sorry?
What do you mean you think?
Well, Alan, we've got 50-something properties and there are some changes. When we started off, it was a different fee structure. So as it's changing, you know, I can't, you know, I'm very good, as you know, but I can't keep track of 56 of them. So I can certainly send you the figures, but I'm pretty sure it's 0.65 of the asset value. The average across all of our competitors is about 1%. So we are certainly still far less than everyone else.
Right. And my impression was, when I last spoke to you, your sort of methodology was to try to buy beaten up properties that you could fix up a bit and improve the rent. Is that right?
Alan, that's sort of the formula, but they're not always beaten up. Some of them are just not quite as loved, but we're certainly not a buyer of the new 10 and 20 year leases because we can't find value there. I think a lot of these people are buying assets now that there is no chance that they can get their money back. If you buy a property with a new 10 year lease, well, tomorrow it's got 9 years and 364 days. So it's very hard to add value. So yes, we'll buy property either in unloved areas. So we've been an active buyer in Darwin. We have about $500 million in assets north of Mackay now. And we'll also buy the sectors that are not as loved. So, you know, we're terrible. We buy mining sector because our investors are happy to get the distribution from that. So, yeah, still pretty much the same. Something that needs some work, whether it's the location or the tenant or some work to the property.
What do you mean the mining sector? What are you buying in the mining sector?
Well, we have 21 properties in Mackay. And while it's a reasonably diversified economy, we have a lot of engineering companies that'll be doing work on mining machinery. We actually own the Adani headquarters in Townsville, so we couldn't get any more deeper in the poo if we tried. So in Townsville, I think we've got 14 properties in Townsville, and a lot of that is leaning towards the mining. Even the residential sector is being driven by the mining. So massive mining influence up in the north. And you know, we're about to start a residential subdivision, which is only a very small part of the business in Serena. And in January, there's 34 houses come up for rent, properties came up for rent, and there's 400 written applications. That's being driven by the mining sector up there. There's a lot of mines that are being developed and expanded out in the Galilee and Bowen Basins that never get any press because it's not very beneficial for the mining companies to promote it, but there is a lot happening up there.
It is interesting that you go for short leases rather than long-term leases. I mean, I think the conventional wisdom in property is the longer the lease, the better, but you're not. Take us through why you prefer a short lease.
We're buying a property down south at the moment, Alan, and I won't say where it is because people would work it out. And it's got 4.5 years to go. It's a $80 million asset, and we're buying that at a yield of 7.8%. If that property had a lease of 7 to 10 years, the yield would probably be 5%. So we're a yield buyer. You know, we're not a company that has been developed for funds under management. We look at how do we get the highest distribution to our investors every month. So we go for the sectors where there isn't the competition. Of course, we would like to have a 10-year lease if we could get an 8% yield, but I'm not prepared to, you know, some of these now you're seeing are in the 3 and 4% yield. And by the time you put a stamp duty on that, it's pretty horrific. So whenever we buy an asset, we look at how do we get out of this. Well, if you buy a property with a shorter term lease, say 4 years, if you can get in 4 years' time, get a new lease, you can actually sell it and add value. Where if you buy a property with a 10 or 20 year lease, you're not going to be adding value for 9 years or 19 years. So
that's, but is the, I mean, obviously the shorter lease means higher risk. Is that right? I mean, is the trade-off the usual, the old risk return trade-off?
Yeah, the risk reward ratio. That's right, Alan. But yeah, when we buy those properties with shorter leases, we'll talk to the tenant. This one that we've got down south, they're in a sector where they need to be. They're actually needing more space now. It's very hard to see them moving.
What sort of property is it?
It's got a health related tenant in there. So it's a commercial office with a health tenant in there. So it's much easier to take a view on what the tenant may do in 3 or 4 years' time. Where taking a view on what a tenant may do in 10 years' time, I think is much more difficult. So while you can count on your income for 10 years, we always look at how are we going to sell this and how are we going to get our money back or make a profit on it. So with the shorter term leases, there's certainly a lot more work, but making money wasn't supposed to be easy.
So have you been, I think you've been moving a bit into health industries. Have you? How many medical clinics do you own now?
We bought three up in Mackay region about 2 months ago, 3 months ago. We have a large property down at Cleveland that is now zoned for medical facilities. So we're looking at putting specialist centres and x-ray clinics and a number of other assets. So, and we had another one opposite the Royal Brisbane, Alan, which we sold. We found we got offered too good a profit to refuse. So we have been making a bit of a push into the medical, but, you know, it's a very, it's a very popular sector at the moment, and we're, we're having trouble digesting the yields that people are paying. But so we bought three up in Mackay, and we got a very attractive yield up there. And, you know, Mackay is a very wealthy area, so we see it going forward, not backwards.
How do you handle capital gains in the open-ended trust? I mean, I presume with the closed-end trust, once the property is sold, you distribute the profit to the unit holders. What happens in the open-ended funds?
In the open-ended, you know, I'm not the tax expert, but we certainly we try to reinvest as best we can. If there's a taxation liability for our investors, we make sure we return enough equity for them to pay the tax. So they're not out of pocket. But most of our investors, Alan, the last thing they want is money back. You know, they're after income to live off. And when we return equity, our investors aren't very happy with that because they know if they were getting 9 or 10% distribution in a new asset, they're not likely to get that. So that's not a real issue for us.
The other big shift that's been going on is online shopping. Have you been moving out of retail and into industrial as a result of that?
We certainly have more industrial than we do retail, where I think probably the last time we spoke, Alan, we would have had probably 60% of our portfolio would have been retail. Now it's down to about 30%. But the homemaker bulky goods sector hasn't been affected too much. A matter of fact, they've done very well. If you look at your JB Hi-Fis and your Good Guys and Spotlight, all of those tenants, certainly some of the, retail is a dynamic business. You know, it's always changing. If it didn't change, well, we'd still be shopping at corner stores instead of Woolworths and Coles. So if you're going to be buying retail, I don't think you want to be buying a sub-regional shopping centre with a Coles or Woolies and a couple of DDS like Kmart and Big W and 60, 70 fashion stores, that's very difficult. So you'll see some of them are converting to trying to get as much medical in as they can, get some more services. We've got one of our larger centres where we're looking at converting a large part of it to office for government tenants, because the one thing that shopping centres have is a lot of car parks. Typically with a shopping centre, you have to provide one car park per 10 square metres of lettable area or 3 per 50. So if you can convert some of that bigger space into office, you can certainly, it's a good utilisation of the space, but it's always challenging, Alan. It's not easy, but once again, making money's not supposed to be easy.
I read a piece the other day that said that, I think it was about the UK, and it said that the UK has 40% more shops than it needs. Do you think that sort of that? Do you think that's kind of that kind of thing is correct? That Australia has more shops than it needs now?
Certainly, Townsville does. it's got a lot. It has too many. Our northern areas. While I said that about Townsville, our northern and regional areas aren't quite as bad. I think if you have a look at the cities, and I think Melbourne's probably a bit worse with another lockdown. It's amazing that very few people in the city, yet when you look at the turnover for, say, your liquor and your coffee shops and some of those, they've actually been up over the last 12 months. So if those people aren't shopping in the city, they must be shopping in the suburbs. So I think there's too many shops in some areas and not quite such a problem in other areas. Yeah. We've found in our portfolio that the regional locations, we've got centres in Orange, Bathurst, Dubbo. Some of those regional areas are really booming. The inquiry that we've had from major retailers, we've got more inquiry now than what we've had over the last 5 or 7 years. I think Australia is going through a pretty dynamic change.
But it's not. I mean, this is structural, isn't it? I mean, long term change as online shopping increases, you need fewer shops.
Yes, certainly I can't argue on the online shopping, but I don't think it's quite as bad as people make out. I was at a conference a couple of years ago, and I can't remember the name of the CEO of JB Hi-Fi, but a fantastic retailer.
Richard Murray,
Richard, if you listen to this.
No, he's now gone to Premier. He's now working for Solly Lou.
Best of luck to him. But I found that, Richard said that when they opened a store in an area, they would find that their online would more than double. Because if you bought a TV or a radio or something from JB Hi-Fi online and there's one in the area, a store in the area, if you had a problem, you'd go into the store. You felt more comfortable. So once again, it's a challenge, Alan. So, fashion is certainly doing it. Fairly tough, so I think that's where people are buying things online. But your services, we still want to. I haven't found out how you have a coffee online yet, but no doubt some will come up with it. But we're still herd animals. People want to go and have a coffee or a meal at a restaurant. I know the takeaway meals, that has been a bit of a boom with Deliveroo and those type of companies. But there's always opportunities. As I say, if you get rid of some of your retailers and you put in more medical, medical and health, because that area is growing, if you can convert some of it to offices, there's an opportunity to make money. If everything was static, then you don't find the money-making opportunities. So it's a challenge, but you can still find some wins.
And what's your view about office with working from home? There's obviously been a boom in working from home as a result of the pandemic.
Well, I'm not a believer in that at all, Alan. We moved into new offices and I look forward to coming up and visiting them. We moved into these in the 4th of January because my belief when we went into a lockdown that people would get sick of it, and we've developed our offices to be, call it COVID-friendly. So we've got 1,800-metre workstations. We have bigger boardrooms. We have concertina doors to two boardrooms. So we moved in here on the 4th of January, the week after we went into lockdown, so we could still keep all of our people working and have the right space. So you're going to need more office space for the same people, or if you want the same amount of people, you're going to have more office space. And certainly some people want to work from home. There's an interesting article in the paper yesterday where I think one in four people are having sex during the boss's time while working at home. So I think if bosses knew that, they would. They might be paying them as much.
Only one in four.
Yeah. Well, people are a bit shy, Alan, so I suppose they don't own up. So, I think if you're a younger person wanting to learn, I think you need to be in front of the boss. I think it's very hard getting a promotion if you're working from home. And some people with call centres, I understand how that works. But for business like ours, you know, the reason that we do all the services, that the legal, the leasing, the project management, the facilities, is so that people can all sit down together and work through the issues. So, you know, and I know some of the larger banks, the reason that they don't have all their people back at work is because they just don't have enough desks. Yeah, they went into the hot desking and sharing and all that other stuff. Now if they want them back in the office, they just don't have enough room. So I don't think this working from home will last. If you're in a government sector that actually doesn't do much, I think you can be as productive at home as you can be in the office. But if you're a business that likes to achieve results, then I just don't see it working. And I think we actually have a property in Canberra, and while the government had moved out early last year, they then moved back in April because it was an older style fit out with bigger offices, more space. So they need that extra space. We have another property in New South Wales that has the police. And when I was there before Christmas, I said, "Gee, it's a big meeting room. You're going to be, you know, making this a bit small." And they said, "No, the police, I think they said that they have to have one person per 4 square metres in all their meeting rooms now, and that won't go back because they said, you know, the police can't be getting either this virus or any other virus." So I think it's changed a lot of work practices as it has with shopping. I think structural change, as you said before, Alan, and I think there's a lot of changes happening, and I think it's going to be fantastic for regional areas and particularly Northern Australia and North Queensland. So I think we've got a fantastic decade ahead.
I suppose the proof of it is in occupancy rates. I mean, have you noticed any decline in occupancy in either office or retail for that matter?
Certainly in office, you know, there's people have been scared the government we have here, you know, they don't force their workers to come back to work. So you've got a lot of, still not as many people back in the office, but I've noticed where we are in Queen Street, you know, the queues at the sushi bar at lunchtime, where you have 4 or 5 months ago, you might have had 2 or 3 people, now it's up to 20 people. So they're still not all back in work. And I think in Victoria a couple of months ago, I think when they, not this lockdown, the one before, I think the following day there's going to be 50% of government workers was mandated 50% to come back to work. Instead of that, they stayed at 25%. So there's certainly issues in areas at the moment, and that's going to take a while to overcome. And I think in Melbourne, there's a lot more offices in the suburbs getting built. You have people staying out of the CBD. So it is difficult for some people. I've seen the incentives in the CBDs in the CBD in Brisbane have certainly gone up. Landlords got scared very quickly and offered much bigger incentives because they didn't want to have vacancies. They weren't game to sit. So, but I think once it settles down, particularly in Queensland, we'll be back to where it was 18 months ago. Certainly not recovering overnight, I know that, but in the retail, in our centre up in Cairns, we have higher foot traffic now than what we did February in 2020. It's a different type of shopper. Cairns, it was reasonably reliant on international visitors. So you see, we had 3 luggage stores. Well, now we only have 1. People just aren't travelling as much, but we filled one with the medical clinic. So there's challenges, Alan, but, you know, that's we turn up for work every day for another challenge.
Speaking of challenges, obviously the 8% yields you're getting or distributions you're getting now are terrific with interest rates so low and, you know, the term deposit rate in the banks under 2% and so on. What happens when interest rates rise, both to the competition between yourself and term deposits, but also your capitalisation rates?
Alan, I won't argue with you on that point, but I've been getting told for at least 7 years to lock in interest rates because interest rates are going up, and I didn't, and they haven't. Now, one day they will. I don't doubt that. But I just can't see them going back to where they are. You know, I've always been of the belief that interest rates in Australia are dictated by Sydney housing. You know, most people in Sydney buy near the top of the market, and you know, they just can't raise interest rates, mate. They, they got 0.25%, 0.5%. But when that happens and I read your report loyally, even though we haven't spoken for 5 years, Alan, I still read it every week. And I know a lot of people are talking about inflation, but with inflation, you get a rise in real assets. So with inflation, you can actually sell into a rising market. Yeah, you don't want to be waiting till interest rates get too high, but with the first couple of increase in inflation, if you want to sell, you can sell. And given that we've got almost 5 times interest cover, and we put money away in for every one of our properties every month, and I think in our office fund at the moment, we're putting away 14% of the income. So we're prepared for a few interest rate rises, and that we'll still keep paying the same distribution. So we're fairly relaxed with that, and I look forward to a bit of pain for some of the others who have been paying too much for assets. I look forward to interest rate rises.
Right. Okay. Good to talk to you, Warren.
Fantastic, Alan.
That was Warren Ebert, the CEO of Sentinel Property Group.